Hi, I'm Ken.
And I'm Dee.
And this is Antiques Freaks.
A Freaks of Antiques.
What are we talking about today? What is it?
Cameos.
Cameos.
And not the Hollywood kind, because I wouldn't have much to say about that.
I am kind of sad now that we don't have a special guest to announce.
Yeah, I know.
That we don't have a cameo.
Well, now I feel like I busted out this episode way too soon before we can meet any hot celebs. Charlie Hunnam's in town. I guess I could get him.
Yeah, no, I'm sure he's chomping at the bit to cameo in our cameo episode of our Antiques podcast.
I would love to know Charlie Hunnam. If you're Charlie Hunnam, you're out there, you hear this podcast, let me know if you even know what a cameo is. That was rude. Don't tell him I said that.
No one tell Charlie Hunnam about this podcast.
Don't.
But seriously, what the fuck is a cameo?
A cameo is a kind of jewelry.
All right.
Generally. More generally, a cameo is actually a method of carving. Cameo is a specific method of carving wherein an image is carved in relief, which means sticking out from the surface with a contrasting background. Oftentimes, a natural dual tone of the material was used for this effect. This is the opposite of intaglio, which is incised inside the material, leaving a negative space. See that a lot in modern signet rings. When I say a dual tone material, I think onyx, which often came in gradations of white to black. Sardonyx, which is a stone, a natural stone, which tends to be banded in light brown to darker brown to almost black. Agates, which tend to be multi-tone, like lighter to darker ranges of color.
So for the onyx, I would be carving away white to reveal black?
Yes.
Okay.
With an image that is standing out in white, and the black kind of is not only the background, but is sort of incised through transparency to become shading and such.
Okay.
Probably important to mention, these have to be transparent, translucent kind of materials, or the effect just doesn't work.
Shells?
Shells are the most popular material for cameos.
All right.
You think of, you're probably familiar with the carved cowrie shells, very popular, like, tourist thing. Early Roman periods experimented with layered glass, very difficult to carve, as you might imagine, and even harder to manufacture during the Roman period. Shells, of course, mussels, cowries, helmet shells, queen conches. Other materials would later go on to include coral, gutta percha, ivory, celluloid, lava rock.
What? Like volcanic rock?
Yeah, like volcanic rock.
Oh, okay.
That I'll get into a little later. There's some specifics about the lava rock that are kind of fun. Some debate is when cameos came about. Generally between 5 BC and 300 BC. That's a pretty wide net, I do know. Some argue that certain styles of relief petroglyphs from prehistory do technically qualify as a cameo.
I mean, it's only a 495-year gap.
It's not as bad as 15,000 BC, oh. If you want to include petroglyphs.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
That's a range.
I mean, it's a pretty, at its base, it's a pretty simple carving technique, which is why there's like, I don't know when to say this actually happened. What isn't in debate is the place of origin. Alexandria, Egypt.
Really?
Yep. Early Egyptians were the first to have cameos. And from there, through their trade with Greece and then later Rome, spread.
I know we are talking about jewelry, but when I hear the ancient Egyptians invented cameos, I'm just picturing like some ancient Egypt theater with like a guy popping out on stage, waving at the crowd and then running away.
And it is me. Kemet is here as well. Just Ra walks in and says, I say, and then walks off stage.
Yeah. A quick cameo from Imhotep and...
Well.
And scene.
Yeah, actually, when I was just like brushing up on like some of the history that I didn't know about, I found out there's a website called Cameo where you can hire washed up pseudo celebrities to just like say shit for you on camera.
Oh, that's sad.
It's kind of a bummer to go because it's just like Lance Bass. It's like, oh, honey, you're worth more than this.
You're worth so much more than this, Lance.
And then I took it back because I was like, oh, it'd be kind of fun to get, like, a friend, like, a greeting from Lance Bass, because he was always her favorite. Found out he charges $150 per message.
I mean, if I were Lance Bass, I absolutely would, too.
That's too rich for my wallet, Lance Bass, but you're still worth it.
New Patreon goal.
Give me $150 so I can commission a happy birthday message from Lance Bass.
Antiques.
Antiques. Well, it's going to be an antique. I'm going to have it engraved in stone. With a portrait.
Wait, are you going to commission a cameo of Lance Bass to go with your cameo of Lance Bass?
New Patreon goal. I need enough money to have a hand-carved cameo made of Lance Bass in profile.
To commemorate.
To commemorate. the fact that I had this conversation about him.
So back to the topic at
hand. So back to cameos. The word cameo, it either comes from cameo, a Kabbalistic word that means magical square. I don't know anything about Kabbalah.
I mean, I'm into magic squares. I'm down for that.
I think magic square is pretty cool. Alternatively, the Arabic word kameha or kamehameha. Just kidding.
I was going to say, you put that
That's
in.
A goof. Kameha meant amulet. Personally, I like it better and it makes more sense, all things considered.
But consider also magic squares.
Magic squares are pretty cool. What we do know is that they're bitchin'. That's a note I wrote down, so it's important. So, originated in Egypt, crazy popped off in the Roman era, which is where you see most of, like, the antiquity ones. The ones in the Roman era were largely precious and semi-precious stones, onyx, sardonyx, and agates, as I mentioned before, as well as their early experiments with pressed glass. They weren't specifically a feminine thing. This sometimes surprises people. I don't know why. Not everything is feminine all the time.
Yeah, isn't jewelry being girls only very recent as a concept?
Yes. So they were used for signet rings, big status symbol earrings, and most of them were really big, so they'd just be kind of like objet d'art, which is a nicer way to say tchotchke. Very expensive tchotchke.
French for art object.
Yeah, can you imagine? It did end up experiencing resurgence of popularity in the Renaissance era in Italy, 15th, 16th century, and the Victorian era. Big fucking surprise, they do it to everything. Did it start in Rome? I guarantee, but the next sentence out of my mouth is going to be resurgence of popularity in the Victorian era. As usual, we can blame Queen Victoria for making a thing so popular that she made it lame again.
Wow, rude.
Due to the Industrial Revolution and Queen Victoria's hard-on for cameos, they found out a way to mass-produce them at that point. Tanked cameo values and over time tanked interest in them. Queen Victoria does it every time. In the mid-Victorian period, cameo habiles came into being. A habile is pretty much just a cameo that has a carved woman wearing her own tiny diamonds on necklaces, earrings, brooches, or sometimes all at once.
So your jewelry has jewelry on it.
Your jewelry's got jewelry in it.
All right.
I find these pieces exceptionally beautiful.
Putting jewelry on your jewelry is, I feel, a very Victorian thing to do.
So extra.
God damn.
Queen Victoria is also the reason that cameos ended up becoming synonymous with portraits of ladies.
Really? Were they weren't always?
No, they weren't.
What were they of before? Just like any iconography you felt like?
Basically, a lot of Roman poetic scenes, you know, scenes from myth, large landscapes, which, you know, I'll mention a little later, landscapes are some of the most valuable subject matters. But yeah, metaphors, allegories, all sorts of stories, kind of. The Victorians would go fucking ham with this for mourning pieces later. Occasionally there were cameos made of their dead relatives ascending into heaven. because, you know, the Victorians.
So at that point, the piece is like the size of your palm.
Those are big pieces,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and people would wear those still. They'd be like necklaces.
Oh my god.
So.
This is my dead uncle medallion.
This is him going shoom into heaven.
Wow.
Yeah. So shell, the material we most often associate with cameos, mostly used during the 15th, 16th century Renaissance. Mussels, cowries, helmet shells, queen conches, the kind of shell will actually eventually end up affecting the value. But the Renaissance people were just nutty for these cameos, partially because of neoclassicism rearing its head as it will over and over again. And they found out that shells were easy to carve and easier to come by. Other materials would eventually include coral, gutta percha, ivory, celluloid, lava rock. Lava rock's a fun one. This was because during the Victorian era, the rise of the middle class, thanks to the Industrial Revolution, more people could afford to travel. Very popular spot to travel, Greece and Rome. What's there? Pompeii. Pompeii was just the combo of like grotesque and whimsical that the Victorians go nuts for.
It is.
It's like, it's magical, but very dark.
It is primed to become a Victorian vacation hotspot.
Yeah. So at one point in Pompeii during the Victorian era, they just found a big chunk of colorful lava rock. This is cool. They carved this into cameos. And Victorian women would buy these cameos as souvenirs that later served as status symbols saying, yeah, I travel. So when you see a cameo made out of lava rock, it's almost certainly Victorian era. And almost certainly from Pompeii. Probably not a great use of Pompeii's great geological mysteries, but hey, can't go back now.
I'm just picturing, like, we've collected the cameos and now we're chucking them all back into the volcano.
Put it back! Put it back!
Put it back!
It turns out this is disrespectful. So that's pretty much a brief history of cameos. Simple but elegant, just like the pieces themselves. Now, do you want to collect cameos?
Hell yeah, I do.
Fuck yeah. Talk about value. What do we talk about value? Material. That's important. Always is. Stone cameos, more valuable than shell. Because they're older, pretty much. But the most important thing about a cameo isn't necessarily what it's made out of, although age will always factor into value. It's the way it's carved. These are art objects, as we said, and the best way to judge them is to take a magnifying glass to it and look at the lines. They should be smooth, graceful, flowing, detailed, but not rough. Inferior ones will have sharper lines, fewer details, and sort of a harsh, rough-hewn look. So that's really, at the end of the day, what you're looking at is how fucking pretty is it? How choice?
On a scale of slapdash to Bernini, you want to go for the Bernini?
Yep. That sounds dumb when you put it like that, but mm-hmm.
And here I thought I was being rather clever.
Oh, if you were being clever, you just made me sound very petty. Translucency is also important. A cameo should always be very thin. I don't know why exactly this is, except that it is sort of a master artistry to be able to create a wonderful work of art on a piece that shouldn't be able to take that much pressure.
Yeah, because like it's difficult to carve it down to a point where it's translucent without going all the way through and getting into the other color entirely.
Yeah, thank you. This also sets it apart from, you know, modern fakes, which tend to be made very thickly. Other things to look at. Subject matter, like I said before. Portraits of women. It's kind of played out. Those are going to be worth less than other things. Basically, if it's not a portrait of a woman, it's immediately more valuable. With landscapes becoming the most valuable.
Sorry, I've just got a half-formed argument about the devaluing of female portrait cameos, something-something sexism.
Wow! Wasn't expecting you to come out with that one. Whew. So the fakes. There are many. Thank you, Queen Victoria, blaming you for this one. Check for fakes. Look at the material. Should be one of the above-listed materials. Semi-precious to precious or shell. Or something weird like gutta-percha. But when are you ever going to be able to tell the difference between that and resin? Never, so forget I said it. Plastic, resin, and molded glass. Always fakes.
Oh.
What?
I had a very blonde moment where I was like, how do you know for sure the plastic ones are fake? And then... Then I remembered how plastics do.
You know, I'm not confident about a lot of things, but like...
And when plastics were, like, commercial.
Yeah, yeah. And you'll know that it's plastic and not, like, celluloid because it won't be on fire.
I think maybe it would help if we called them reproductions instead of fakes, because they are still real cameos, but they're not...
These are actually the ones I'm talking about, specifically fakes. A real cameo has to be carved in that specific method. These are pressed in single pieces, making them fake cameos.
Wow.
We'll talk about reproductions in a sec.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
Yeah, I know I don't usually draw a line between a fake and a reproduction. This is a very important point to people who are serious about cameos.
All right, let's get serious.
Check the setting. While some inferior carved cameo, shell-carved cameos were set in pig metal or brass, for the most part, it should be a precious metal. Lower quality metal will be an indicator that something might be off.
So, in this context, setting is like the metal frame around the cameo?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. Also, pig metal?
Pig metal. Yeah, that's kind of like a slang term for just like alloys of metal that aren't fine metals.
Okay.
And aren't steel, specifically, because that's also an alloy. But yeah, like, I think iron and copper, like, kind of thrown together is a pig metal.
Oh, it sounds so pretty, though. Just, like, imagine that oxidizing, like, the mix of the blue and red you would get.
That would be very nice, actually, now that you mention it. Pay attention to details. Newer real cameos, reproduction cameos, will be ultrasonically carved from agate.
What?
These are superficially real, genuine cameos. However, they're very new. They can still be nice. They are still real cameos. What you gotta look out for is a lack of tool marks, a lack of undercutting, and a gritty sort of satin finish described as freshly fallen snow texture.
Oh.
So these are made, it's a very fascinating process. There is a master die that's usually carved by an actual craftsman, and it will be turned into a mold, and you will have this piece of agate that you press into it, and then there's a slurry of diamond particles that are vibrated incredibly fast until the piece of agate fits into the mold.
I'm reminded of the sandblaster machine we used to have in the jewelry metals lab.
Yeah, yeah, it's like that, but much faster. These are the kinds of cameos you're going to buy new at, like, Zales. Again, they are real, but they're not hand-carved. And the undercutting, I just want to specify, is literally what it sounds like, small cuts made underneath details. They kind of bring them out more. It's a secret to fine carving. These will all be carved, like, sort of on top in a very superficial way, the way, like, most people who don't have fine artistic training will carve things.
Will they perhaps appear whittled?
Yes. Tool marks are important. You bust out that loop, you look at it, and you see if there are irregular tool marks that you could see on the surface.
Loop in this context being a special jewelry magnifying glass.
You get me every time with that. I forget that a loop isn't a common thing.
I worked in the shop for 2 years without having any fucking clue what anyone was going on about when they were jabbering about loops.
Shit. But yeah, so pretty much all of what you're going to encounter is probably going to be shell cameos. They are the most popular, they are the most recognized, and to a certain extent you could say they're probably the most desirable. Those are pretty easy to spot. You can get very good very fast at telling the natural irregularities of shell from something fake. There are a lot of good reproductions out there. A lot of very carefully made reproductions. I think some of them have, like, a shell backing and, like, a resin front.
What?
Yeah, and it'll still be transparent, and the resin will sometimes feel right, but it's all just a clever ruse. That's where it becomes just important to get to know. This is where mouthfeel becomes a thing.
Okay, are we ever going to have, like, a jewelry-centric episode where you don't advocate biting it?
No. well, here's the thing. I explained it on our episode with Terrible Book Club, and I'll explain it again. Your teeth are very good at picking up microtextures that your hands just can't. Like, your teeth and tongue are very sensitive, probably more than you give them credit for. And they are much better than your hands at determining really fine texture. Like, the grittiness of a pearl is only detectable to tools and your mouth. And that's why I put it all in my mouth. That's why I crunch it all. Because only my teeth and tongue know the way. The face you're giving me is great.
Something, something, oral fixation.
Look, I've been accused of that many times. I will not say anything about that, except that my method works. And I'll be over here with them thrift store cameos that I did put in my mouth.
Do you at least, like,
yes,
antiseptic them first?
Yes, I buy them, clean them, then determine.
Okay, because, like, if you're just biting things in the thrift store, we're going to have, like, a talk.
So identifying the shell, most of them are going to be a russet sort of pink to a peachy color with a white raised carved area. That is the most common, and again, it doesn't take much to get familiar with the natural variations in the shell that make it easier to tell which ones are not reproductions. Just a side note, the most highly priced shell for carving, the emperor or queen's helmet shell, Cassis madagascariensis. As the name suggests, it is found off the coast of Madagascar. It's known as sardonyx shell, very similar to layered agate. Do not know why they prefer it to layered agate, I guess because it's easier to carve.
Sorry, I'm looking at the spelling of sardonyx. And it looks like someone combined the word sardonic with the word onyx to create a new Pokemon.
You're pretty close. Sardonyx is related to onyx.
Oh boy. Is it its more sarcastic cousin?
Yes. When you mine it, it just goes for you the whole time. It's like, oh, I love what you're doing with the cave.
I need you to not fuck with me for like 5 minutes.
Sorry, I'm very sardonyx.
I'm leaving.
It's in the onyx family. It didn't get that name for nothing. I don't know where the Sardon comes from.
So stupid.
This is a dumb podcast for dum-dums.
So cameos.
So some of the aging, some of the ways to age it. These are kind of basic jewelry aging methods. Because it can be very tough with, like, fine metals and natural materials. It gets pretty tough to age something. Pinchbeck. I don't know, aside from very expensive chemical tests, how to properly, like, identify pinchbeck.
Put it in your mouth.
Except that it will look very much like gold, and it won't be gold, and also the piece will definitely be old.
Wait, sorry, my sarcastic jibe was correct?
Yes.
God damn it! because I'm guessing, unlike gold, you can't, like, make an impression in it with your teeth?
Yeah. Yeah, so the density of it is one thing to look at.
So you do have to bite it. Okay.
I don't recommend that as wholeheartedly because that'll fuck up the setting. Pinchbeck is an alloy of copper and zinc made to resemble gold. This was very common in use from the 1700s to the 1800s. Pretty much that whole 100-year span. Again, I don't really have a very reliable way to determine pinchbeck from gold, except that it won't be gold. So you can test gold, and if it turns up bad, but you're pretty sure it's gold, it might be pinchbeck. Things like electroplating, those are usually marked. Electroplating only happened after 1840. If it's marked 9-carat gold, 9-carat gold was only legalized in 1854.
Wait, sorry. Illegal gold?
Yes. That might have to be another, like, episode.
All right, teaser that. Well, put a pin in illegal gold and...
So there had to be more or, like, we'll call them more or less worldwide because any worldwide law is immediately, like, not true.
Right.
But there had to be, like, broad trade laws about how much gold made it legally gold. So that's why you see, like, carats of gold are important for other reasons than saying how fancy you are. It lets you know how much is reasonable to charge for the piece. And, like, how much gold can be in it and considered pure gold without being not gold.
So this is because you have to mix gold with other metals in order to make anything lasting with it, because gold in itself is all very soft?
Yeah, it's like super sculpy in its natural state.
So, like, truly pure gold you can't really do a whole fuck of a lot with?
Yeah.
But the number of carats relates to how close to pure it is while still being functional as a metal?
Pretty much. The carats is almost directly parts of gold per the mix.
Okay.
So, like, you can kind of see it, like, as a roughly, like, a percentage, with, of course, the higher numbers meaning that there's more gold in it, which is why 24 carat is so sought after. And there are some higher gradations of gold. It's very squishy. There are a lot of European golds that are incredibly squishy because there's a lot of natural gold in it. Portuguese gold is very infamous for being just squishable. One of the fun things about gold, though, is that legalization of different gold contents do make it easier to kind of date things back when they're an unusual content like 9 carat. You probably haven't seen that before. That would definitely be after 1854.
All right.
Other factors, like a safety catch for a pin back, suggest a newer piece. Safety catches and pins didn't come around until, I'm going to say, the early 19th century. There's probably a hard date for that, but it's kind of hard to pin down.
Early 1800s?
1900s.
So the early 20th century.
Wrong century. Fucked it up.
Sorry.
Wanged it again. Yeah. But, like, yeah, 19... Without goofing myself up, like, late 1800s to the early 1900s are kind of when safety catches came in for pokey things.
Because everyone was like, hey, I sure do hate getting stabbed.
Yeah, because there's a pretty well-known problem with stabbing people with pins. So decided to try to clamp down on that.
Every once in a while, I just remember that mothers used to pin diapers with non-safety pins.
That's the most horrifying thought I've ever thought of. I forget.
They didn't have anything else!
Weren't safety pins invented for diapers?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hence the name safety, because, yeah. Like, hey, this won't stab your toddler and give him lockjaw.
Yeah, it, bigger problem than you would have thought.
Fuck.
This is another one of those, like, tall orders where I'm like, get to know all jewelry. But a basic knowledge of how jewelry does come in handy. Because the settings will tell you a lot about it. And that's that. As for care of a cameos, that can be, it's a little touchier than other gems because it is mostly natural material and a soft carvable natural material, which requires a little safeguarding. They don't like to get too dry. They do not like too much force being applied to them, although you could say that of a lot of things. You just, pretty much their only upkeep is don't wear them so often that they can break. Don't keep them in the desert. Wash them with a gentle small brush and a little gentle dish soap as needed. Dry it thoroughly. And once a year, oil the piece with Winto Green Oil, which is the professional recommended, or mineral oil. They like to be oiled. It helps keep them from dehydrating and cracking.
I'm just being incredibly blonde this evening and only now realizing mineral oil is for application to minerals.
Well, you know, I don't actually know if that's why it's named that.
Oh, fuck. Mysteries.
Mysteries. Stay tuned. Maybe we'll let you know what we find out about that. I read somewhere that you can use toothpaste to clean them. I don't tend to trust that advice for, like, anything.
Not even teeth?
Well, because you don't know what's in toothpaste. Like, toothpaste was a fine cleanser in, like, the 1960s. But there's so much shit in toothpaste now that it's like, I don't really know what I trust applying it to. Other than my mouth. When I'm cleaning it in between sessions and putting jewelry in there. So that's cameos!
So, now that I am starting my collection of cameos.
Yes?
How much money am I going to miss?
Well, that's a very fun thing. Since they range throughout history, you can get them pretty cheap. Some inferior quality cameos will just run like 30 to 50. And from there, they go up. Finer materials. I think The average very well-carved shell cameo in a gold setting, 100 to 125 kind of range. And then you could just go up or down depending on how comfortable you are and what you're looking for.
I am looking for an Onyx Morning cameo with lots of skeletons.
Holy shit, no. That's not happening in a budget that someone would have doing something other than being God.
Why is it always so expensive to be goth?
I know, because being goth is like a finite resource, I guess.
It really shouldn't be.
It really shouldn't be.
You'd think Hot Topic would have tanked that market.
But since those were almost always like very specific custom pieces, they do tend to be more expensive. And they're custom pieces during an era where custom pieces were no longer the norm. Because, you know, before the Victorian era, if you wanted a cameo, it was custom. But after the Victorian era, you could just kind of pick them up in Pompeii.
I feel like with the Victorian emphasis on mourning jewelry, I should be able to get more skulls more easily.
That's fair. Maybe someday, man.
Someday. If you have any skulls, send them to me.
Give us
your skulls.
Patreon goal. We need goth stuff. Halloween is coming. We want to be goth.
Goth Christmas is coming.
Oh, do you want to like announce what we're doing for October?
Oh, yeah. Fucking full month of Halloween episodes because goths don't do anything by halves.
Yeah, get ready. The whole month of October is going to be spooky.
Haunted as fuck.
That's all I have to say about that. It's going to be wicked haunted.
Do you have sources for cameos?
Pretty much just one, other than like Wikipedia for some of the history stuff. CameoJewelry.com. They are one of those cottage industry websites that's exhaustive.
I do always love when we get to do that, but like, sources for this episode include episodesubject.com.
Yeah, it's great. And when you go to these websites, it'll become abundantly clear that they nabbed that domain, like, during the .com boom.
They nabbed it from GeoCities.
It's like they knew the internet was going to be, like, the way. Because there's no other way that someone got cameojewelry.com. Although, look out for my next website, cameojewelry.fart.
No.
I'm coming for you, cameojewelry.com.
No.
So yeah. Any other questions about cameos other than how you want to be super goth about it?
That's it.
Okay. Thanks for listening.
If you would like to talk to us about cameos or if you have any spooky Halloween suggestions for us, you can hit us up at antiquesfreakspodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter, antiques_freaks, on Tumblr, antiquesfreaks.tumblr.com, Facebook, facebook.com/antiquesfreaks.
Is that it?
I think that's it.
Well, on the Etsy.
Oh, if you would like to buy some vintage goods, including a very fun 60s pulp exploitation addiction memoir.
More fun, I can guarantee, than Go Ask Alice. I read parts of it and holy shit.
Yeah, no. I Am a Teenage Dope Addict is a literary sensation, let me tell you.
Tour de force.
Absolutely torrid. But yes, it is available on our Etsy, which is etsy.com/shop/antiquesfreaks. And we have plenty of other vintage goods as well. We're just really excited about that book in particular.
Yeah, it's our fave.
And we also have t-shirts with the podcast logo on them. Curvy cuts on the way.
Still waiting for the proof.
T-shirt company has to send us a proof for us to approve before we can put them live in the store. But rest assured, they are coming.
I should have just thrown it on like 20 products so I could have gotten them all at once, but I do have to pay for those samples, so.
If you would like to listen to some deleted scenes, including a lively discussion of how great dogs are.
Yeah.
And an argument over which dogs are big enough.
Yeah, turns out all of them if you're short.
That will be on our Patreon, patreon.com/antiquesfreaks.
Yes.
Sure. And
I'm almost positive that's it.
And you can also join the Random Vintage Postcard of the Month Club, where we send you a random vintage postcard every month. It's a lot of fun picking out the postcards and mailing them out, so jump on that. Special shout out to our current patrons, Anjali, Charles, Endless Night Arts, Jared, Juha, Casey, Kevin, Lisa, Matt, Paris, Patrick, Priscilla, Sarita, Talia, and Zane.
Makes me so happy that there's so many names. I love you all. Air kisses. Air kisses.
Yes.
Air kiss SFX.
And thank you to everyone for listening.
Goodbye.
Bye.